All right, well, the Gang of Four is back together. We've got Tim Hurst, Jeff McIntyre-Strasburg, and Maria Sermamanka, and I'm David Westcott, and we are all back for the latest installment of an Earth and Industry podcast. And it's been a while since the last one, but we wanted to share some thoughts about the recent UN Climate Summit in Copenhagen. Just quickly, if you've been living in a cave, some of the basic details of what was finally agreed to, if you want to call it agreed, from Copenhagen, basically a statement that the conference, quote unquote, took note of, which I'm told does have the same force of law to the degree that law exists in this environment. That says they recognize the science that says we don't want the temperature to go above 2 degrees Celsius. An agreement that deep cuts in global emissions are required according to science, and that we need to stop global and national greenhouse gas emissions from rising as soon as possible. There was the establishment of a climate fund, the Copenhagen Green Climate Fund, which sets a goal for the world to raise $100 billion per year by the year 2020 to help developing countries cut carbon emissions and adapt to climate change. This funding would come from, and I quote the agreement, a wide variety of sources. Developed countries would raise funds of about $30 billion from 2010 to 2012. And a significant portion, that's a quote directly from the text, of the funds would flow through the Copenhagen Green Climate Fund, which tells me they can count money that's not necessarily in the fund as part of this agreement. There were discussions about emissions cuts by developed countries. Rich countries that are parties to the Kyoto Protocol, that does not include the United States, would strengthen their existing emissions reduction targets. There was no agreement for a base year for 2020, but there were, I guess what you could call it was an agreement to agree. There was a rich countries would commit to economy-wide emissions targets for 2020 to be submitted by the end of January 2010. There was also a lot of talk about how to verify that countries had been had been complying with this agreement, and the language is still unclear. I believe it was analysis and consultations was the term that they agreed to ultimately. So there were also sort of the salvo saying it's there's a crucial role of reducing carbon emissions from destroying forests, and that funds should be raised, although not specified for that. I'm sure I left out a few things, but I'm curious to hear from our group of experts on their reaction to the meeting itself and to the agreement. And so we'll start with Executive Editor Tim Hurst. Tim, what's your reaction to the agreement, to the summit?
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing from the group of experts too. Are we going to call them now, so I wasn't expecting a whole lot out of the whole process. In terms of its politics, there's a lot going on. What it did, beyond the fact that we didn't sort of set any binding targets. What it really did was keep the discussion, kind of keep the discussion going, so we didn't end anything necessarily. But what it kind of does in terms of its process is we saw that there's some real sort of procedural structural flaws to the way these negotiations go on. We basically saw this agreement get held up more or less by, I think, five countries. Who didn't want to sign on, and that's why they had to go to the whole take note of thing. And so we saw what comes out of it is an agreement that's not really much of an agreement other than a lot of, well-written wording and some lofty goals. I'm kind of skeptical yet hopeful.
Skeptical yet hopeful. That's.
Yeah, you know, I'm curious to see how this plays out in the Senate, for example. You know, the big question was for many Republicans or even moderate Democrats was how China was going to be, you know, it's always why does the United States have to do anything if we can't get China and India to commit? Well, China and India have committed. They were slow on accepting the sort of verification and transparency stuff, but you know, they're on board. So the question is how that's going to play out, I guess, with the sort of people who are trumpeting around China as being unwilling to budge.
Okay. Maria, would you agree? Are you skeptical yet hopeful and looking at the Senate, or did you have a different take?
I don't know. I'm just mad. I think taking what I'm getting confused on is they've got this accord and they talk about how, yes, we don't think global temperatures should rise more than 2 degrees Celsius and blah, blah, blah. But they didn't necessarily agree on that, right? They took note that they think that. So now is the next step to actually think that and the next step to actually do something about it? And is that 5 years down the road? I get so frustrated that we just keep talking and talking about it. And when many of us voted for Obama and elected him, we wanted to see some change faster. And I realize that that's not going to happen. We've got all these other countries involved, but I just think I was hoping for more. I was hoping for real commitment from the U.S. to lower emissions by a particular date versus taking note of the idea that we think that that's a good idea.
Idea that we think that that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay. That's an interesting take as well. Jeff, where do you are you skeptical, hopeful, just mad, somewhere in between?
Probably, you know, somewhere in between. I mean, we yeah, true. I'll take the triangulation position here.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, you know, since Maria mentioned Obama, you know, I was definitely disappointed in the role he played. I thought he gave a great speech. I wish he had showed up Monday to give it. Because he did set a great framework for what should be happening there. As far as I can't remember the exact terms he used, but transparency was a big one. I mean, it seemed to me that that would have set a great framework for the negotiations portion of it, rather than, you know, showing up the last day and trying to save the day, so to speak. You know, we do have something in writing that I think Carl Burkhardt at Mother Nature Network said. You know, we've got it in writing now that these, you know, the parties to this agreement, such as it is, recognize these particular facts, and that's something, and something you can build on. Still, yeah, largely I'm disappointed, but like Tim, with the lead up to it, that I don't know that I was expecting a whole lot either.
So it sounds to me like Maria's porridge is too hot, Tim's porridge is too cold, and Jeff's porridge is just right.
You're making me hungry.
I do have
I
to
haven't eaten
say
breakfast.
though, I am glad that they're coming back in January with those targets on emissions, like Tim mentioned. That I think that'll be interesting to see what those numbers are and then what the plan is, how the countries lay out the plan to actually get there.
Well, if you look at it, and I'll just try to share a couple of thoughts as well. If you look at it sort of in the context of what the United States is going to do next, what I think happened is President Obama went to Copenhagen and said, "Look, I'm trying to do the right thing here, and I need some cover from y'all, and you know, just give me something I can sign that gets the process moving forward in my own country." But what the administration did ahead of the conference, I think, is far more substantive and far more important than anything that happened in Copenhagen, frankly. And that's when the EPA announced that it had determined that carbon emissions represented a threat to the health of the United States, and basically asserted the right to regulate carbon emissions as a public health issue. And so
Right.
we'll
Good
see.
point. Yeah.
We'll see I mean, my guess is I'm calling that the Corporate Lawyer Full Employment Act of 2009, because every company that emits carbon is going to fight that. But that to me represents the most substantive thing that happened in the last month on this issue. But what Copenhagen, I hope, did is it showed the world that climate change has stopped becoming a science issue and it started becoming a development issue. And what we really saw publicly is kind of how the World Trade Organization works. It's trying to wrangle a bunch of differences through consensus in semi-transparent fashion. And what we saw is a lot of countries getting together trying to preserve whatever economic advantage they had. And climate change is going to be solved not simply by scientists, but by economists. And the science is, aside from the special cameo appearance from Senator Inhofe, and I don't know if you all read about that farce where he flew in, told one reporter that this was a conspiracy from Hollywood, and the one reporter that covered the impromptu press conference said he was ridiculous, and then the senator promptly got on a plane and left.
Nice.
But what this tells me is that the science is no longer in question, but the leadership is. And what was produced from this meeting does not at all match the rhetoric going into it. I don't know how many leaders we saw say the same thing: the time for talk is over and the time for action is now. And we didn't get any action. We just got a lot of basically commitment to keep talking. And
Right.
while that's great, it shows me that the burden is not going to be. Our political leadership globally has demonstrated to us that they are not going to be the ones to make the concessions and make the hard decisions, that the decisions are going to have to come from companies who are going to have to innovate their own ways out of this and get the credit that they'll deserve by reducing their emissions, and from consumers and other businesses who choose to frequent those places that are more responsible, because our leaders aren't going to lead us on this. I mean, I think that's pretty
Yeah.
obvious, and we're going to have to do it for them.
But
Yeah, may I
what do you?
jump? Oh, go ahead. I was just thinking, did you guys read Tom Friedman's piece this morning in the New York Times?
Not yet.
Because yes, he essentially makes that argument.
Really? Now I wish I
Yeah.
read him.
What he says is we've got two approaches to addressing climate change. One is the Earth Day approach, which is what Copenhagen represented.
Yeah.
The other is the Earth Race approach, which is, in short, harnessing the market, and ultimately that's what it's going to take to do this. So yeah, and he says, yeah, that the next important step is what happens in the Senate here, and how does that create incentives and so forth for companies to innovate, and to comp you know to create sort of a global agreement to compete in terms of clean technology.
I don't know that you need an agreement to compete, but
Yeah.
I'm curious to know what Tim seems to try to wants to get in here.
Yeah. I'm sorry I interrupted, Tim.
No, that's all right. I wanted to hear what you had to say. I'm as a sort of process nerd, I'm really curious about what you all think about the process in terms of it. Here we are complaining sort of about the leadership and a little bit about our own leadership, meaning President Obama having gone to Copenhagen and maybe not coming back with anything, about the process of the whole thing going down. Here it is, we thought we had a deal, or at least they had announced they had a deal. And I spent the better, this is what a loser I am. I spent the better part of Friday, I guess it was Friday night. I was up until late at night. I don't even want to say how late it was, watching the simulcast, live simulcast of these debates. And just to see them wrangle over the minutiae of like placements of commas and we want to strike and replace it with as well. you know, that kind of stuff. And it would just go around and around and around. And you had the UN leadership up front saying, you know, guys, we haven't slept in 48 hours. You know, can you try to keep it focused and try to keep it, you know, our eyes on the prize? And so
was
I'm
that
more
just
concerned.
A stalling tactic, Tim, or were they really?
Well, there was both.
That concerned.
Right. I think there was both. You know, I think there was, like David said, there was countries were trying to sort of stake claim to whatever they could, and they didn't want to sort of be bullied by the whole process. So I think there was a combination of things. But, you know, I was frustrated by it seemed a lot of just stalling and not really wanting to get anything done. You know, it was and once it got to that point where it was take note of, it was when they had officially made that decision.
Mm-hmm.
It went on. I mean, they then argued about what the language was going to be in the decision that wasn't even a decision, you know? So, yeah.
Well, and I don't know if you saw this, but Pascal Lamy, the head of the World Trade Organization, actually saw what took place in Copenhagen and said, wow, that's really how we want to do things. The process itself is not well designed to deal with urgent pressing problems.
Right.
And, you know, just to get at what you're saying, and it's the problem is when you've got issues of sovereignty, you know, how do you convince a sovereign country to do something that I think everyone accepts is not in their economic interest? And,
right.
You know, to construct this negotiating system and structure, you know, your the underlying assertion is that this is a negotiation. And I think China and its surrogate countries, like the Sudan, played it masterfully. And they looked at it as negotiation, and they played it that way, and they held out until the last possible moment, and then they conceded as little as possible because they approached it and viewed it as a negotiation. And what
right.
I think the scientists and the environmentalists in the world are saying is this isn't a negotiation. This is an ultimatum. And, you know, we're either going to fix this or we're all going to die, or our, you know, grandchildren are going to die, or we're going to have incredibly dire consequences. And meanwhile, you've got the UN ambassador from Samoa coming up to the talks and saying, you know, I'm not here to make up numbers. My country is sinking into the ocean. And the fellow from the Maldives, president of the Maldives, addressing protests, you know, saying we don't need oil, we need transport. Let's rethink this because we're all going to have to leave in a few years. And so, you know, as long as you look at this as a negotiation, you're going to see what we saw. But as long, you know, until you see it as a scientific certainty and an ultimatum, you know, we're going to get this.
Right. You know, and negotiate in terms of like political theory, negotiating and consensus building are not the same. You know, there are
right.
not opposite ends of how you approach a problem. When you approach a problem with a negotiating frame, you've got a position, right?
Yep.
And that's your position. If you approach a problem from a consensus building or a collaborative frame, in theory, you're not supposed to have a position. You're supposed to come in, you know, open-minded, willing to move from that position. And so I think there's a you know, a theoretical, there's a vast difference.
So where do we go from here? What do companies, we've got this sort of piece of paper now. And, you know, the world meets again. We submit some things to the end of January. The world meets again in Mexico in November 2010. You know, I think we've already, you know, I labeled this summit the You First Summit. I think next year I'm already ready to call it the Now We Really Mean It Summit.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we go from here? What needs to happen in your minds? Who should I put on the spot for that? Let's put Jeff on the spot. He's really good at
sure.
that.
Sure. I think we've got to get a substantive law passed here.
In the Senate? In the United
yeah.
States, rather.
In the United States.
Because the House has already passed its bill.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right. And yeah, so we need to get the Senate going. We need to get something substantive to the president to sign, and you know that obviously puts us in a better position to lead on the issue
mm-hmm.
to come Mexico City.
So Maria, what's your perspective? I mean, obviously there's the political angle. You come from sort of the corporate and communications world. What do you see as next?
Well, what I really want to see is a really strong push by clean energy advocates, business leaders, the kind of push that we saw maybe about 4 years ago or so, where it seemed like everybody was writing about global warming. And I realize it is still front of mind, and we're seeing it in the New York Times often, and we're seeing it in more traditional media. But I think the whole issue around those emails that were hacked, and now that I'm home on maternity leave, I'm watching a lot of news that I don't typically watch, like CNN in the middle of the day. And it's constant questions like, are we being, is the wool being pulled over our eyes? Is climate change just a farce? And it's all these questions and seeds that are being planted that I'm afraid that public support for really strong action is going to start to slow down, or it's not going to seem as urgent because that seed now has been planted that, oh, well, maybe it's not as bad as some people think. And maybe the scientists are just fudging the numbers a little bit. So I really want to see a concerted communications effort by advocates and by business people out there really making a case for how urgent this problem is.
And Tim, what do you think about what's next?
That's a Marie makes a really good point, and I think the one thing Copenhagen did, I felt, in the weeks leading up to it, especially with the whole ClimateGate thing, was there's probably some emboldening of the opposition. They are probably coming out of this saying, we actually did pretty well. Here we came out of this. There's no real agreement. There was no agreement to really cut, any emissions, substantive numbers. And the people are still questioning the science in the mainstream media. So, I think I'm with Maria on a sort of, getting back to pounding the pavement and really sort of working on messaging. But I also see something in terms of policy. There's this Cantwell Collins bill that was introduced. I don't know if anybody is familiar with that, but basically, that was introduced into the Senate as a sort of alternative to cap and trade, to the Boxer Kerry or Kerry Boxer, and it would essentially be a much more not quite revenue neutral. I think they said that it was about seven. You basically pay to pollute 75% of the revenue taken from that will be returned to U.S. citizens in a monthly check. And if there's not one thing Americans don't like more than monthly checks, is like a weekly check, So we'll see how this actually plays out, if it can gather any steam or not. So I really think that the U.S. kind of needs to take this and run with it, and we'll see what happens. Hopefully that if we can get the economy to pick up a little bit. I think we'll be able to get something in the United States.
Okay.
So my marching orders are go and go get a job.
Go get a job. I like the idea of the monthly check, though, I gotta tell you.
No, and politically that sells.
Sort of.
That's something that people are gonna like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess the Senate already took the. I don't know if you saw this for the healthcare bill. They decided to levy a tax on tanning salons. So,
Really?
yeah, to help pay for the healthcare bill, they put a national sales tax on tanning salons. So I
Wow.
was kind of hoping they could wait on that one and use that for climate change. But somewhere there's a tanning salon lobbyist wondering what the heck just happened. But
Yeah, where was the tanning lobby on that
yeah,
one?
really. Apparently, spray-on tans are still safe, so maybe that's where we go
Phew,
next.
good.
Yeah, but the Jersey Shore folks will be thrilled. Well, I think that's all the time we have for this edition. Tim Hurst, Maria Sermamanca, Jeff McIntyre Strasburg, and I'm David Westcott, and we'll see you again next time.